It's Nick DiGilio here. Yeah. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 a.m. Steve Cochran rolls in at 5. We get to hang with him every morning after the 5 o'clock news, which is awesome. So my guest, I'm very, very excited to interview here, has got this really great project that's happening right now. It's the second round of this current project, of this certain project that he's doing. He is on a quest to track down the female stars of some of the 80s biggest music videos. I love this. I think this is awesome. For more information, you can go to noblemania.blogspot.com. We have a link on our Facebook page. So I just want to welcome him to the show, Mark Tyler Nobleman. We welcome Mark to the show. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. All right, let's first, how did this start? And by the way, I love the picture of you circa 1988 next to your Huey Lewis poster.
Yeah, well, that's how it started, I guess. It started as being a teenager in the 80s and loving the music and turning into a writer as an adult. And at first glance, this has nothing to do with what I'm doing for a living.
Well, what do you do for a living?
I write books for young people.
Okay.
And young people obviously do not have, you know, typically have much knowledge about 80s music. But my blog has evolved from being just about my work and about children's literature into being that plus what I call pop culture archaeology. And I do that because there's a market for it. I mean, there's a gap. You know, there's nowhere else that you can find out this kind of information. So I just, you know, filled my own passion by, you know, tracking down people that, you know, like I say, you know, whose faces you don't forget, but whose names you never knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done that not just with these 80s women, but also with superhero. It started with superhero people from the 1970s and 80s, people that were the voices of the Super Friends cartoon and who appeared in Superman the movie and other things of my formative years.
Mm-hmm.
That I did because it relates directly to work that I've done. And then this just came out of that. And that was such a big hit and really fun and just fun to see that the traffic was good and that people were talking about it, that I, you know, chose to do something that isn't directly related to my work, but is related to that previous series, and also just related to good content in general. That's what a blog's for.
Sure.
Talk about, you know, what pancakes you had for breakfast, but something that actually people want to read.
Sure, yeah. Well, let's go back to that superhero thing. Who did you find? What were some of the best stories of people that you found who were associated with superhero projects?
One of my favorites was the pimp from Superman the movie. He was in it for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But people remember that vividly. He's the guy that when Superman comes out of the – right when – Superman's first appearance in the movie.
Right, right.
When with the helicopter – you know, my favorite scene, the helicopter scene when Lois is stuck on the helicopter.
Right.
Superman comes out of the building and this guy says, yo, and he says, excuse me. He said, that is a bad outfit.
That's
right. All he said. So I interviewed that guy who was in disbelief that anybody would care.
What's
nice guy.
What's he up to now?
Well, this is going back, you know, a couple of years already.
Sure.
But when I talked to him, he was living in New York, and he was a personal fitness trainer, and a very, very humble, very nice guy. I actually met him for lunch, and there's a picture of that on the blog. Just a really nice guy.
That's
and
cool.
I had to explain to him that he has had a far bigger impact on impressionable young people than he might have realized.
Yeah.
And so the interview is, you know, it was pretty popular.
That's funny, man. That's so funny because I loved that guy. And he is seriously in the movie for 5 seconds. I love him.
Yeah. And can you imagine today them putting a pimp in a movie, a superhero movie? So there's another claim to fame.
Oh, man, that's great.
Yeah.
Great. Now, speaking of superheroes, you know, you would like to, before we get to the whole, you know, women of the 80s and the videos and stuff like that, I think you would like to maybe talk a little bit about the guy who doesn't get the credit for co-creating Batman.
Yes.
I would love to open up the floor for you to tell us about this guy, because when I think Batman, I immediately think Bob Kane, and that's it.
Yeah, and you're in good company.
Yeah, so talk about him, man.
Sure. That's my most recent book. It's called Bill the Boy Wonder, The Secret Co-Creator of Batman, and it tells the story of a guy named Bill Finger, whose name does not appear on Batman, but should have been there all the way back to the beginning in 1939. He was the original writer, and he was the co-creator. He not only wrote the first Batman story, but wrote the first stories to feature Robin and the Joker and the Penguin and Catwoman and the Riddler and the Batcave and the Batmobile and
wow.
Batman's origin and the Dark Knight nickname, and he named Gotham City and Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson. I mean, the guy was indispensable to Batman. But Bob Kane took all the credit, and this was an era where that was, I mean, you could say it was easier to do, and it certainly was more common. And so Bill Finger, you know, died in 1974, poor and alone. And I believe that he should be a household name, and that, you know, people should grow up knowing that his name belongs there, even though officially it's not going to appear there unless, you know, there's legal action, frankly. That's the only way that you can change something that big.
How did that, I mean, how did this happen? Did they have a falling out? Was Bob Kane just a jerk? What was the relationship between the two?
Well, you know, I talked to a lot of really kind older people who knew them both, and, you know, I think most of them would agree that Bob Kane was a jerk.
Really?
And that's not the word that some of them use.
Right, right.
But, you know, it's obviously more complicated than that. This is a very, very big issue, and Bill Finger's not blameless. I mean, it isn't like, you know, he can be removed from the equation. But my question was, did he ever fight back? He created Batman, you know, one of the greatest fictional fighters in history. Did he stand up for himself? And we didn't know until I started this project. And we have some evidence that he did not just take this and did not just think this was okay. But obviously, if he did anything, it didn't actually affect his destiny because his name is not there.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob Kane was unscrupulous, and he was a businessman that took advice from other people that, we would think an enlightened person today would not take. But this was an era where there was, you know, there were no witnesses, you know, there were no watchdogs, there was no Facebook for people to start a petition, add Bill Finger's name to Batman while he's still alive and see 100,000 people sign up in 10 minutes. I mean, this was a different era.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, those kind of things didn't happen for Bill.
How did you discover this guy, and how did you discover this story?
Well, I didn't discover Bill Finger.
Right.
He was already, I mean, even DC Comics, which publishes Batman.
Right.
You know, I always say, if you sat down with the president of the company and had a beer and said, who created Batman? I mean, the guy's going to say that Bob Kane and Bill Finger. He might even say Bill Finger's name deserves to be there. But obviously, the president is not the company. And it's not like one person with a heart and soul can change this on his own. So Bill Finger was discovered in the 60s by a fan who was savvy enough to check out that it couldn't be this one guy, Bob Kane, writing and drawing every Batman story every month. So he wrote letters to the publisher and said, as people do still, and said, you know, who's doing this? And they would, back then, they'd write you back. And they would actually say, you know, Bill Finger wrote this story and that story, and, you know, this guy's name was Jerry Bales. He noticed that Bill Finger's name was the one that was coming up more than any other, so he wrote Bill a letter and said, I'd like to interview you. And, I mean, I wish we knew more about that exact situation, because imagine that Bill Finger's been anonymous for a quarter of a century, and all of a sudden he hears from a fan. And he probably had, you know, little concept that fans knew who he was. His name was not there. So it was just a great, you know, moment for really for cultural history that Jerry Bales did this. And he interviewed Bill, and then he wrote an article about that. And, you know, God bless him, he mimeographed that and mailed it out to Batman fans all over the country.
Wow.
That's how we know about Bill Finger.
Man, oh man! And tell me about the book that the book that you wrote a little bit more. What's the angle on that? Bill the Boy Wonder, the secret co-creator of Batman. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the Batman story with Bill as the center for the first time ever, which is where he belongs. So, you know, there's been other books about the history of comics. There's been books about Batman, and Bill's mentioned, but sometimes it's shamefully, you know, ridiculously little how he's mentioned. You know, once you know the story, it becomes appalling to see that he's, you know, thrown in as an afterthought. And, you know, Bill Finger, helped Bob shape the ideas. Well, if you break it down beat by beat, you know, he did a heck of a lot more than just shape Bob's ideas. In fact, Bob Kane, by most people's accounts, in fact, everybody that I talked to, did not write a Batman story in his entire life.
Oh, man.
And so it was just a really, you know... It's a cultural tragedy, is what I call it.
You're absolutely right. Wow. Well, good for you for putting that together, man, and letting people see it. I'm reading here that after his death, there was a comic writing award that was named in his honor.
Yes, that's given out every summer at Comic-Con, the big Comic-Con in San Diego, and it's the Bill Finger Award for comic book excellence in writing, and it's given to one living and one deceased writer.
That's nice, though, that they're remembering in that regard, I guess, you know?
Oh, yeah, and like I said, it isn't like people are trying to cover this up at this point. It's just that for it to be officially changed, you know, it's going to be a bigger deal than any one thing, than any book, than any award. You know, then I give talks all over the world about this. So that's great. It's raising awareness, and, you know, it's hopefully helping educate people beyond that credit line. But, you know, what I want, what a lot of people want, is to see an actual concrete physical change to the credit line, which would mean so much to not only the fans, but really to just integrity and pop culture history.
All right, yeah. You know, it makes you think, though, Mark, about, you know, credits on things that have been created years ago. Like, maybe there are more stories like this. There are more creators out there who aren't getting the credit that they deserve, because this is huge.
Yeah, well, there are. I mean, in fact, it's rampant in comics. But what I always say is, you know, they're not. You know, there's only one Batman. You know, this has happened with so many characters, but Batman is the world's most lucrative superhero. I mean, the guy is far and above more iconic and successful than even Superman.
Yeah.
So, you know, not to dismiss or diminish other creators who got screwed, if you want to look at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Batman is just an empire unto himself.
Yeah.
So if there's something that happened over the backdrop of such an influential character is, you know, I think deserves some attention.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. That's great. I'm glad you did that. Mark Tyler Nobleman is with us. All right, Mark, we're going to take a quick break, and then it's all about chicks from the 80s, okay?
Yeah, great.
All right, hang on a second. Mark Tyler Nobleman is with us. He's a pop culture archaeologist, if you will, and he is on a quest to find some of the women from the classic 80s videos. He did one round of this already, and he's doing round two, and we'll talk about that coming up right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. Thanks for hanging out. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can send your text to 24720. Sign your name on those texts at 24720. Best way to hang out with us is facebook.com/NickDShow, where you'll find a link to the blog of my guest, Mark Tyler Nobleman, who is doing a second round where he is trying to track down some of the ladies from classic 80s videos, music videos. And tell me about the first round. Give me a first round recap, Mark.
Sure. Last year, 2013, I decided to embark on what I thought would be a fairly quick and simple project to track down some of the women who appeared in iconic music videos of the 80s. So what I quickly learned is that the few whose names were already known and online were still hard to find, and the rest of them were even harder to find. But I love a good challenge, and I do some detective work for my books, like tracking down all these people that knew Bill Finger, the co-creator of Batman, personally. And, you know, those are mostly older people and hard to find and hard to get on the phone and hard to just get to it in general. But these 80s girls were equally hard because, as a lot of them pointed out, they weren't credited. They weren't named in the videos. And so it took some real digging. And it became almost addictive. I mean, you know, I had a list of who I wanted to find. And the first round, I found just about everybody. They didn't all say yes, but most of them did.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just such that this response from fans, and even more surprisingly from the media, was just so overwhelmingly positive that I talked myself into doing it again.
Yeah.
And the second round, which is going to come out, I don't know exactly when, but I'm thinking not before June, is going to have even more than the first round. So.
And who were some that were in? I'm looking at one of them that you were looking for, and it's from Lou Gramm's video Midnight Blue.
Yes.
Tracy Lynn. Now, here's the deal. I had a massive crush on Tracy Lynn. She was so hot. And but I'm talking from Fright Night 2. That's what I remember her most from. She was in Midnight Blue. What's happened to her since?
She was one of the most evasive of them. She's not a performer anymore, and she prefers to keep her private life private.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, I was thrilled that she agreed to even answer as much as she answered. And if you look at her interview, you can tell that she kind of loses steam throughout, you know, toward the end, and just doesn't really want to be doing it. But to her credit, and to my luck, she did finish the interview and let me publish it.
Yeah.
So, you know, apparently no one else has been able to get her to do that. And it took me a while to even find her. So I didn't, you know, I didn't see her movies. So I, you know, unlike other people whose other work I might have known about, I don't think I asked her about that specifically. I always ask, what else are you doing? So I don't know about that, but she's, you know, she didn't tell me what she's doing now. She's very, you know,
she made a few films in the 80s, and all I remember is that when I saw her in Fright Night 2, my head almost exploded. I thought she was so attractive. Yeah. And
that's an example of, you know, that song is not. It's not an iconic song of the 80s, and the video isn't even in, you know, some people probably don't even remember the video.
Yeah.
But it was iconic to me. That's my little secret, is when I say iconic, some of them are unquestionably iconic across the board, like Aha, Take On Me. Some of them are iconic just to me, but that's, I have the right to choose, right?
Of course you do, man. Of course you do. Yeah. We have to talk about, I don't know if you watched SNL about 3 months ago when Josh Hutcherson was the host.
I watched snippets of it, but not the whole thing.
Okay, did you see the bit that they did with Your Love?
No, I didn't see
that. Oh, Mark, you need to go. Okay, you need to go online.
Yeah.
And just look up SNL, Josh Hutcherson, and they do a whole unbelievably hilarious bit with that outfield song.
Huh.
Yeah.
You know, usually I'm going to look it up later.
You have to, man. Trust me, you will not regret it. It is hilarious. And so much, in fact, that whenever I hear the song now, and yes, I do hear the song now and again, I immediately now will think of this SNL sketch forever. Just like Don't Fear the Reaper, I think a cowbell. Every time I hear it, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That one, of course, I know.
Yeah. So you got to check it out.
I will look it up.
Absolutely.
Usually people email me about stuff like that. No one caught that one.
Well, who is Josie?
Well, yeah, I asked the woman in the video, whose name is Joanne Willett. She's lovely, and I asked her that, and she said she doesn't think she is, just by the way that the song is phrased.
Yeah,
that it's, and I'd have to revisit how she said it, but it sounds like they're talking about someone else, that she was like the other one. I think she was the other woman.
She was the other woman. Yeah, like
I
that he's talking to, because Josie's gone. Josie's on a vacation,
right.
So he wants to just use her love.
Exactly, and I think that she is supposed to be that other one.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to analyze the outfield, man.
Yeah, I know. See, and you know what I believe, and you obviously can see the value in this, or the you can see my line of reasoning is that everybody has a story.
Yeah.
You know, you could just stop someone on the street. I could stop any random person on the street and say, "Tell me your best story," and I could probably make a pretty good interview about it on my blog.
Yeah.
No one's ever heard of that person. So by that notion, if you take the angle of a music video that, you know, you still know nothing about this person except that she was in a video.
Right.
And then, you know, overlay that with whatever her real story happens to be. Well, you know, like I said, most of them are interesting.
Yeah. If you want to read the profiles for the first round, you can check it out at noblemania.com, .blogspot.com, and we have a link on our Facebook page. Who are you looking for now? And I want to make a suggestion if you do a round three, Mark.
I'm open to suggestions.
Okay. Well, if you're doing a round three, you have to find the girl who looked exactly like Martha Quinn in Jay Giles' Centerfold video.
Ah.
I remember when the video came out, everybody thought it was Martha Quinn. And Martha Quinn was like, she would have to get on the air and go, "That's not me. I'm not in that video." But the girl she's featured, like, there's a whole bunch of girls. Obviously, you've seen the video. So there's a whole bunch of girls in that video. But there's the Martha Quinn lookalike from the Centerfold video. I'd love to know where she is now.
Well, you know, Nick, it's funny that you say that because tonight, well, what will be tonight for me, later today, tonight, I am interviewing the only one from the video that I have found, that video. It happens to be tonight.
You're kidding.
But it's not the Martha Quinn lookalike. However, you know, I'm hoping that she will help me find others.
I mean, I've
asked her by email to name if she remembers any names of anybody else.
Yeah.
And for some reason, she hasn't answered that. I don't know if she's just waiting to talk or what, but hopefully she'll either know some of the names, or she'll know who might. So
wow.
I will try.
Okay, cool, man. I'm glad you're breaking some ground on that, man. That's an important mystery. All right. Well, who are you looking for?
All right. So let's go through those people because I was really excited when you asked me to be on the show because I need some reach here.
Okay.
I have this. You know, it's not even a profound belief, but you know, the more people that hear that I'm doing this, whether they're fans of 80s music or not, if everyone just sent an email or posted on Facebook or did a tweet, if everyone who's hearing this would do that, no question in my mind would I find at least one of these people.
Okay.
I mean, that's just a numbers game.
Yeah. All right, so we're looking at Jesse's Girl by Rick Springfield.
Right, and that's a big one. because, you know, the video itself is not iconic, but the song is a classic, and it was that was number one when MTV launched.
Yeah.
So I need to find her.
And she's not really in it that much.
She's in it for, you know, a blip.
Yeah.
I didn't even remember that. In fact, in my intro for the series, I said, it's funny that the Jesse's Girl video doesn't have a girl in it. And someone wrote in and said, yeah, dude, it does. So I missed that. So I'd love to find her. And I've talked to just about everybody that was on set, and nobody has any idea what her name
is,
even the guy who's with her. So that one is really going to have to come from the public. Someone who just is friends with her now.
Okay.
Jesse's Girl.
And by the way, Mark, that's the punchline of the SNL sketch. They use Jesse's Girl as the punchline of that SNL sketch with it. So it's got two great 80s songs in it.
Yeah, well, no question am I looking that up.
Yep. You know, all right, and you mentioned Africa by Toto.
Africa by Toto. And then for the first round, I found all four of the ZZ Top women from Legs. And there was another woman in the earlier video for Give Me All Your Loving. And she's, again, I mean, it's a group, and she's not focused on, but she's the missing one.
Okay.
So, and her picture's on my blog from Give Me All Your Loving.
Okay.
And then Billy Joel. I wanted a Billy Joel, and I wanted to find a couple of the people from Tell Her About It.
Yeah.
Again, they were, you know, the video was like a series of scenes, so there wasn't one woman, but I'd be thrilled to find any of them.
Okay.
And in the second round, I actually have six of the women from We Didn't Start the Fire.
Oh, awesome.
Including Marley Matlin, who's an Oscar winner.
Yep.
Giving some cachet to this.
Yeah, from this city, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And very lovely, very, you know, generous to do this. And then this is not a big one probably to some people, but I'd love to find her from Chicago, Along Comes a Woman, which is like a Casablanca takeoff.
Right.
And then here's one that's probably the most obscure. From a song called Shake Me by Cinderella,
right,
which I just remember from MTV. I don't think I ever heard it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But there were these hot women in it, and one of them looks like Amanda Peet. She's not Amanda Peet. People have written in, but it is not her, because Amanda Peet was only 14 at the time.
Yeah.
So it wasn't her. And then the other one, the last one is a good bookend to Jesse's Girl, which is one that people have been asking about online. She's the girl from Richard Marx, Should Have Known Better.
Right.
And if you don't remember her, if you look her up, you probably will. The video is pretty kind of racy for it. Not in terms of what skin, but just it's a story about adultery.
Mm-hmm.
And she is extremely hard to find. I don't know her. You know, most of the people, I don't know their name at all.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. Well. So all right. Well, there you go. We hope we can help you out, Mark. By the way, I'm now going to like subscribe to your blog and read it all the time.
Thank you.
I think it's great, and I love what you do, man. I think it's funny, and I hope we can help you find in your quest for the 80s movie or music video girls. And Mark, you gotta email me or friend Facebook me or something when you find out who the Martha Quinn lookalike is.
I'm gonna try.
Okay,
I mean, my hopes are placed in this woman tonight. I don't think she's gonna have a long list of names, but hopefully she'll at least help me find one. And it's like a leapfrog.
Yeah.
You find one, and then you might find another, and then, you know, that's how it often works.
That's great. All right. Well, good luck in your quest, Mark.
Thank you so much, and thanks for helping me spread the word.
Absolutely.
And, you know, people that are listening, just Google help me find these 80s girls. You'll find my blog post with their screenshots and the name or the video names. And please just tweet about this with my Twitter handle is Mark with a C, T, Nobleman. Put me in there and ask people to contact me if they know anything about any of these women.
Got it. All right, Mark, thanks, man. A lot of fun talking to you, man.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. And go watch that SNL clip.
I will do just that. Thanks.
Okay, take care. There you go. Mark Tyler Nobleman. Check him out at noblemania.blogspot.com. Help him find those 80s ladies. It's very important. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.